And this is our number.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Oh, it's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. And before, I got some local news I want to get to here, but I got to tell you, this has been a bad weekend for the Trump haters. Michael Avenatti, he was the creepy porn lawyer for Stormy Daniels. And CNN had him on for months. Because remember back in the olden days when Stormy Daniels was going to be the way that they were going to take down Trump? And that didn't go anywhere. And then they shifted to the Mueller. He's going to be impeached. It's treason. That all vaporized. And now we find out that Michael Avenatti, the creepy porn lawyer, is facing up to 107 years in prison. He is accused of attempting to extort Nike out of $20 million. Conspiracy to transmit interstate communications with intent to extort. Conspiracy to commit extortion, transmission of interstate communications, blah, 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 blah. So he'd go to prison for 107 years. This is a guy who, I mean, he loved the spotlight.
Do you know his connection to R. Kelly? He's actually representing a couple of the parents and a bunch of the women that are, like, suing R. Kelly or charging R. Kelly.
Is he still? After this news today, he said that, what was the date on this? So this, he says that he's on Twitter saying there's a major high school college basketball scandal perpetrated by Nike that we have uncovered. This criminal conduct reaches the highest levels of Nike and involves some of the biggest names in college basketball. And apparently he was... And this was before the charges were announced today. So apparently he was threatening the highest level people at Nike, saying, I'm going to call a press conference. I'm going to say that you're involved in this high school college basketball scandal. And the feds had already been looking at all of this. And they're facing, he is now facing 107 years in prison. And the thing about Avenatti, he probably likes this because he's a lot like Wiener, that creepy little perv, where if they can get their mugs in front of a camera, even if it's, you know, to do a mea culpa about sending pictures of junk to underage girls, in Wiener's case, or Avenatti facing 107 years in prison. These are guys who they have just become so addicted to the spotlight, even if it means that that could lead to them going to prison for the rest of their life. So Avenatti's been arrested. A few months ago, he was the hero of CNN. He and his client, Stormy Daniels, they were going to take down the president. Oh, this has been a bad 3 days for the Trump haters. My goodness gracious. Okay, let's get some local news here in the Fastest 15. So I heard this story in one of Carolyn's newscasts. So a local dog breeder is offering a $10,000 reward. 11 dogs, most of them puppies, were stolen from her home in Redmond last week. Melissa Norton told our news partners at Cairo 7 TV, two adult dogs were stolen along with 9 French bulldog and pug puppies. Oh, how cute do you think those are? French bulldog and pug puppies. They were 4 to 8 weeks old, and she said she is just absolutely sickened that somebody would steal their dogs.
Panic, sick to my stomach. I couldn't believe it. You know, and I also felt guilty because, if those girls hadn't had puppies, that had been sleeping on my bed, and they wouldn't have been there for someone to steal them.
Here's the part of the story I have to admit I don't understand. The dogs were kept in a separate building on her property, which did not have a working lock. Several laptop computers and other valuables inside that building were left untouched. She has no idea who would steal the dogs. She said 3 of the 11 have microchips, and she's filed a police report. But I don't care how safe your neighborhood seems. Why would somebody leave laptops, electronics, in an unlocked building anywhere in King County these days? Or, for that matter, dogs, if they're valuable. Or dogs, even if they're not valuable. I always get sad when I hear about dogs being in separate buildings. I like watching those puppy videos where they're in a playpen in someone's house and they're interacting with humans all the time. I don't like the separate building thing. We had a big debate. We had a huge debate when we wanted to get a new dog, because I was thinking we've always gotten rescue dogs. Always from the pound or, you know, animal control somewhere. And I had a bunch of people who said, you should think about just paying a breeder. And I was philosophically opposed to that.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up with Buddy, who's a spirited little scamp.
Yeah, not your, he's charming. He really
is charming
in his own way.
I love Buddy. I really do. But whatever neuroses happened to him in the first few weeks of his life, he still is carrying that around.
Yes, he is.
He's this morning. So he'll usually sleep with one of the kids. And then he lays in the hallway outside of our bedroom right at before 6:30. He somehow has an internal clock because I get up at 6:30. And then he does this thing where he bows down, and I go and I give him love. And then as I'm walking down the stairs, his nose has to make constant contact with my leg while I'm walking.
How does that even work?
It's his love touch.
Wow.
Now I don't know, but he almost trips me sometimes. But he has to make physical contact when we're walking.
That's cute.
It is cute.
My roommate has a dog, and a lot of nights he'll know when we turn off the TV that we're going to bed, and he sleeps with her, right? And so we'll turn off the TV and he tiptoes into my room, jumps on my bed and plays dead. He turns over and plays dead because he knows he's got to go to her room.
Yeah.
And we have to drag him off the bed and roll him into her room. I mean, and not because he's not really fighting it. He just knows that's an attention drill.
Yeah. I will happily deal with the neuroses because we saved a dog. He was down in Texas and he was at a kill shelter and we saved his life, so we can put up with the neuroses. Don't know if my wife can keep putting up with the scratched front door, but we'll put up with the neuroses.
You can put one of those panels on the door. You should do that.
I know. We have to refinish it.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get the invisible fence so he won't attack the door when UPS comes. Whole thing. Okay, I love this. So there are two TV shows where any story in the news, you can find a reference to that news story in two different TV shows. One is Seinfeld. Almost everything in life has a Seinfeld reference. And the other one is The Office. There is a Michael Scott reference for almost everything in life. And so a guy at the Washington Free Beacon, he put together all of the Democratic presidential candidates, including Inslee, as Michael Scott quotes. He started with creepy Joe Biden. You know, you've seen those videos where Joe Biden's especially pawing the underage girls whose dads are getting sworn into the Senate. Man, I tell you what, I rewatched one of those videos about 3 weeks ago. It is so creepy.
Why are you watching them?
It was when Biden was trying to decide if he was going to run. And I thought, I kind of remember this, but let's watch it. But he just, he had paws all over these little 8 and 10-year-old girls.
He's one of those old men smoochers.
Ooh. Ah. So here's here's Michael Scott as Joe Biden.
I think she is an incredibly, incredibly attractive person. Come here. Give me a kiss. Come on.
Michael, come on. You don't have to.
Okay. Michael Scott as Kamala Harris.
Here you go.
Okay, Michael, come on. Let us know.
No, if you think prison is so wonderful, then enjoy prison.
Those any locked people in the conference room. Cory Booker is Michael Scott.
It's like the end of Spartacus. I have seen that movie half a dozen times, and I still don't know who the real Spartacus is. And that is what makes that movie a classic whodunit.
Former Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper.
Nothing wrong with this stuff at all. This is fine. You know what? Gay porn, straight porn, it's all good.
Elizabeth Warren is Michael Scott.
I am Michael, and I am part English, Irish, German, and Scottish. Sort of a virtual United Nations. But what some of you might not know is that I am also part Native American Indian.
What part Native American?
2/15.
A couple more before I get to Inslee. Beto O'Rourke.
Guess what? I have flaws. What are they? Oh, I don't know. I sing in the shower. Sometimes I spend too much time volunteering. Occasionally I'll hit somebody with my car.
These are perfect. Every one of these is absolutely perfect. Bernie Sanders.
So I made them a promise. I told them that if they graduated from high school, I would pay for their college education. I've made some empty promises in my life, but hands down, that was the most generous.
Okay, and finally, Jay Inslee, the governor of the great state of Washington, is Michael Scott.
Too much change is not a good thing. That's the climate.
So there you go. Every single presidential candidate is Michael Scott. Okay, next up in the Fastest 15, a listener sent this to me at one of the public radio stations in town. And since I'm using their audio, I'll give them full attribution. KUOW. They had a couple of young women on the station who were so upset, Zuhira Ali and Kea Roy, because people don't pronounce their names correctly. And they said having your name, and the whole point was not pronouncing someone's name correctly is a racist thing to do.
I honestly just stopped correcting my teachers altogether. At some point, it's just futile.
Are you serious?
First of all, if you're going to pronounce names correctly, if that's the whole point, pronounce futile correctly, too, for crying out loud. Let's pronounce everything correctly.
I honestly just stopped correcting my teachers altogether. At some point, it's just futile.
Are you serious? I was never one to let people say my name wrong, teachers or students.
Really?
Yeah, my name is a part of my identity, and to allow someone else to say it wrong is stripping me of that.
Okay.
It sounds very scripted.
It's so scripted. It's just awful. I was at a drive-thru this weekend picking up a prescription. And they go, okay, it's for Dory Monson. Has she ever taken this before? I didn't care. I get that all the time.
Did you feel invisible?
Huh?
Did you feel invisible?
I felt invisible, yes. You strip me of my name and you strip me of my identity.
Or whether it's just an honest mistake, my name is a stumbling block that people trip over. And that ends up creating a divide between me and everyone else.
Is this just an epidemic on the left that everything, every slight? I told you about when the assembly in elementary school and they did all the boys first and they didn't call my name. And then I'm just slinking in my chair. Please don't do this. Please don't. And they get to Dory Monson when they're calling all the girls up for these awards. Yeah, I just dealt with it. Big deal.
I guess I'd rather feel invisible than humiliated.
There's only one time that I can remember choosing invisibility over standing up for myself. I was at my middle school science fair, and we'd gotten to the award ceremony. My category came up, and when the announcer said the name, he started off with a za, and then he read off a few letters, and then he just stopped. My sister was like, you know, I think it's you they're calling. And I was like, no way. I had not heard my name. By the time I walked down the steps, no one was clapping. And when I took the certificate and sat back down, it didn't feel like I had won anything.
Okay. Everybody's a victim. I tell you what, man, the left, everything's about identity politics and victimization, and we got public radio pushing this agenda, telling kids, look, kids, toughen up. Nobody pronounces my name. Not only do they not pronounce my name correctly, they misgender me. Do you know how hateful and hurtful that is? You know what I did? I persevered. Okay, next up, the latest from the college admissions scandal. Dr. Dre had to pull down a tweet because he was bragging that his doctor had gotten into USC without him buying off the school, like some of those other celebrities. And then a bunch of people pointed out, didn't you and Michael Iovine, the producer, didn't you guys donate $70 million to put your name on a building and to endow a program at USC? And he had to pull down the tweet. Of course your daughter got in when you make a $70 million donation to the school. And then I kind of like this girl on YouTube, Emma Mondin. Listener Linda sent this to me. And Emma Mondin, she said, I didn't get into USC because people like Lori Loughlin's daughter bought their way in.
What I have a hard time with, especially being someone who applied to USC last year, and it was literally all I wanted in the world. Like, when I was having a bad day, I would think, like, oh, you know, I still get to hear back from USC. And, like, you know, that was just something that really, like, inspired me. And it was the reason I worked so hard in high school, is because I had that end goal in mind. And so seeing someone get handed that admission who didn't work for it, it's just hard, to be completely honest with you. So just to give you guys an idea of how I prepared to hopefully get into USC, for my freshman year, I knew that that was what I wanted to do, and so I stacked up on AP and honors classes. I got an SAT tutor so that I can make sure I knew, like, the best strategies for taking the test, and I paid for it with my own money to have someone, like, revise my essays and help me just make them as strong as possible. And so basically I tried to do everything in my own power to give me the best shot of getting into that school. And so to see someone who literally did nothing and had their parents just completely do everything for them, it just makes me disappointed in, like, the whole system, to be honest.
Yes, and we don't know how many kids bought their way in to USC and other institutions, but I liked her response. And that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes of the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
You give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. Coming up next, there is filth and humanity all around the King County Courthouse in downtown Seattle. We'll talk to Hannah Scott about how bad it has gotten. She just talked to a judge. That's coming up next. Well, if you've been downtown Seattle and you have any business to do that involves King County, you have had to run a gauntlet to get into the King County building, the King County Courthouse. Judge Sean O'Donnell just talked with our reporter, Hannah Scott, and he acknowledges he's been tweeting out pictures of the human waste and the humanity that is just littering the sidewalk right around the courthouse.
Couldn't think of a worse circumstance if a juror is being chased over lunch and then you're asking them to go decide an incredibly important decision on maybe someone's liberty is at stake, or maybe it's the fate of a business. It's a real issue.
Yeah, because it's not exactly an objective creating scene.
We're always very appreciative of presence of Seattle Police and Sound Transit Police and King County Sheriff's department when our jurors and staff are coming to and from in those high peak hours. I'm not saying we're expecting them to make arrests left and right, but just presence can make a difference.
It just has to be made safer. That's the bottom line.
Yelled at, harassed, assaulted, exposed to, spit on. They have to navigate human waste, feces, urination. They have to navigate needles. They have to navigate tents.
As I said, our Hannah Scott is the one who talked to the judge, and she joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. And Hannah, is it unusual for a judge? Because I saw his pictures that he was tweeting a few days ago, and frankly, I don't remember seeing that from a judge before.
No, and I haven't seen a judge take to Twitter like that. I've heard a couple of them make some comments over the last year or so about the concerns outside of the courthouse. And really, I asked him, I said, why did you feel the need to take to Twitter? And really, what he said was he wanted to make sure everyone coming to the courthouse, jurors or people who are going to be traveling to that area, are aware of what's going on there, first of all. And then also kind of to send a message to the policymakers, because as a judge, there's only, you know, he can't do that much. He has to come to work and do his thing. And for the judges, they come through this back entrance to the courthouse on 4th Avenue, which is a bit more safe. So one of the things they're trying to do is get the okay to allow also for jurors and some staff to do that. But then, you know, there are other security issues there. But yeah, it's definitely a little abnormal to take to Twitter like that.
The last time I was down there, Hannah, there was an encampment on that plaza right outside the courthouse. Is that still there?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you have the department, DESC, that's right there that does a lot of services for homeless people. And there's always right there across from the front entrance of the courthouse on 3rd Avenue. An encampment. Sometimes there's tents. Sometimes the tents come down for a day and then they're back. And then what he was talking to me about, his bailiff, Rianne, that day that I went to, I want to say it was last Thursday that I went to speak with him down at the courthouse. She had come. She gets off the train and she goes through the Gessler Terrace area. And there's just a whole row of tents on both sides of the street right there. Mm-hmm. And she has to, as you described, run that gauntlet every day. And that particular day, a homeless gentleman wearing nothing more than a jacket had chased her down to work, not trying to hurt her necessarily, just trying to speak with her. But it was scary. It rattled her. And she said it wasn't the first time something like that had happened, not to her and not to other co-workers in the building.
Well, and the story that we had about a year or so ago was that just for the fun of it, some of the people at that encampment outside of the courthouse, they were throwing human feces on passersby, people just trying to walk to work. They were throwing bottles of urine, they were throwing feces, and for no reason other than for sport. And it's just become such an absolutely intolerable situation. And obviously the judge must think that there's a lot more that can be done if he's talking out about it.
Yeah, and not just the judge, some of the others on the bench, he told me as well, and also some on the King County Council. Pete von Reichbauer spoke to me, and he flat out, where the judge kind of stopped short of throwing this all on the city of Seattle's feet, Pete von Reichbauer absolutely slams the city of Seattle for not enforcing the laws, not removing those tents and allowing folks like that to be out there. And, you know, what the city says is Sally Bagshaw has made some moves kind of at the park that's adjacent. I think it's City Hall Park is what it's called, adjacent to the courthouse. They and actually the judge and I, he walked me through that first, asking me whether or not I felt safe enough to walk through there. They put some games, like a giant chessboard, and they've got some food trucks in there, and they try to clean it up, but there's still people sleeping on the benches throughout, and right across there from where the transit station is on 3rd Avenue, there was open air drug use that we saw, and that is pretty consistent on a daily basis.
And ironically, also in the news today, the State Patrol announced that they have to double the amount of money they are spending to keep Jay Inslee safe as he runs for president. They have to double it to more than $4 million over 2 years. And I understand these are different budgets, Seattle, King County, the state of Washington. But there does seem to be a bit of a disconnect that Jay Inslee personally is getting $4 million so he can go around the country running for president, and the citizens of his largest city don't feel safe going and doing business in downtown Seattle. To me, there's a gigantic disconnect there.
And I think that you know, I've heard the governor say, I believe that because it's a state law that he has to have that security force with them, with him, is why he can't do anything about that budget situation. What I will say is this is a budget week in the state legislature. I know the House should be releasing their budget details right about now, actually. And then I know Senate Republicans came out on Friday. They spoke specifically about this mental health issue, of course, kind of responding to the Seattle is dying from Como 4, really saying we've got to do something about this, enforce the laws, you know, pass all of these various bills to make sure that we're addressing this homeless situation on our streets, because people are dying on our streets and it's not safe. And it's not just Seattle. It's spreading throughout the state. So I expect to see a variety of things in the budgets this both today and when Senate Democrats release theirs later in the week, where we're going to see what kind of funding they're going to do to address some of these situations we're talking about. Whether it addresses the exact situation we were talking about is unclear.
Yep. All right. And one thing that is for certain, Jay Inslee's campaign could pay back the taxpayers that $4 million, but he'd rather spend it on campaigning. All right. Great stuff talking to the judge, Hannah. I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
Always a pleasure, Dory.
Cairo reporter Hannah Scott, who talked to Judge Sean O'Donnell, who says it's just too dangerous down by the courthouse in downtown Seattle. We can't even go and do regular business down there. Love to hear your thoughts. The Online Trading Academy text line is 98973. That's 98973. And we have lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I'm going to have some breaking news at the top of the hour, but we are just starting to get some details on the budget that the Democrats in the state house are proposing, and it is based on flat-out unconstitutional illegalities. But some of the quotes are mind-blowing. So I'll have some breaking news for you on that right at the top of the hour. One of the other things that they are still kicking around, I've been telling you that Washington is a de facto sanctuary state, that Jay Inslee has made sure that we attract as many illegals as possible to Washington. And right now, there's still bills floating around in this legislative session that would officially make us a sanctuary state, because Democrats want to get as many illegals here as possible, because it means money and power, federal dollars and an extra congressional seat. When an illegal kills a cop, as happened last week, I and many police officers that I know think that Jay Inslee and Bob Ferguson have blood on their hands. And it's always interesting, because the argument from the left on gun control, if it will save the life of just one child, shouldn't we mandate that guns be locked up? Shouldn't we raise the buying age? Shouldn't we do this and that and that? If it'll save the life of just one child. Well, we've had several stories now. Last week, it was Kittitas County Sheriff's Deputy Ryan Thompson, who was murdered by an illegal after a police chase. The Kittitas City cop who came to his assistance in that chase, Benito Chavez, he talked to Q13 about Ryan Thompson, his fallen brother.
Ryan Thompson. He saved our lives. I had no doubt in my mind.
This guy, Benito Chavez, 22 years old. He's known since he was a kid that he wanted to be a cop. He's been on the job for the city of Kittitas for only 2 months.
It was the only thing I ever wanted to do.
His wife is pregnant with their first baby. It's going to be a little girl. She's about six and a half months along. And his wife was at his bedside and said, yeah, it's really hard to see this.
It's definitely hard seeing him in pain and not being able to do anything.
He has a rod in his lower leg now where his leg bone used to be. And he says that Deputy Thompson, who was gunned down, is an absolute hero.
What he did that night was incredible. You know, I'm lucky to be alive.
And now Officer Benito Chavez, he just wants to get back to work.
I just want to honor him, and, you know, what would he want me to do? And don't get me wrong, I want to get back out there and do the job because I love it, but I really want to get back out there and do the job because of him.
And again, God bless these officers. And, of course, we have other instances of where cops have been executed by illegals in our state. It was several years ago when Jose Sanchez Guillen, he was in a foot pursuit with Deputy Saul Gallegos. And there was a struggle. Guillen apparently got Gallegos' service weapon and executed the officer. Shot him twice, once in the head. You remember that one? There was a manhunt up and down the West Coast and into Mexico for Guillen, and they finally caught him. But we've had a couple of cops that have died at the hands of illegals. And Jay Inslee continues to tell us that it's so important for us to be a inclusive and welcoming state. Remember the story we talked about quite a bit a couple of years ago? 31-year-old Jill Sundberg. She wasn't a cop, but she was the one who Gustavo Tapia Rodriguez pulled her out of her trailer in Ephrata or in Quincy and took her out to a side road, made her kneel down, and shot her 13 times. He and two other illegals were arrested, convicted in that execution slaying. It's odd that when the left tells us tougher gun laws, we need them because it would just save one life, but they embrace policies that lead to the deaths of many more than one. Big lead to two. Breaking news, the budget next.